Hello and welcome to the Scottish Hibs and News podcast with me, Kieran Finlay, and Jimmy Black. Being the editor of Scottish Hibs and News, I get to see and write about great housing developments across the country. But it wasn't until I had the task of judging for the Scottish Home Awards that I had the time to dig down into a submission from Hanover, Scotland that I found to be so interesting that I just had to share the story to a wider audience.
Not just Hanover's first certified passive house development, the project at Drummond is at the very site of its first ever development in Scotland as a separate entity. The project also touches on a number of issues such as community consultation, energy efficiency, and the challenges of supporting a social housing development in a middle-class village in such a rural environment.
Joining us to tell this story and what it means for the future of Hanover are Chief Executive Angela Curry and Head of Housing Janice MacDonald. Thanks both for coming on to the podcast. Angela, I mentioned the Scottish Home Awards here. You did, of course, win the award for the best social development. What has the reception been since then?
It's been an exciting time for us in the organisation to be recognised for the small affordable housing development of the year, given it's so unique, as you said in your introduction, Kieran, in terms of its location, how significant it is in terms of being our first housing development in Scotland, and its unique location. So internally, we've been incredibly proud. Our board are really pleased to have received this award. And it's certainly presenting a lot of questions for us about where we go next with the passive house standard.
And Janice, explain this story then about the homes, the condition they were in before, that it was the first project, as I said, for Hanover, and why the changes were made or the decisions were taken to make the changes.
I mean, Kieran, as we've said, it's the first development, so you can imagine they were an old style, all the properties were old in style, they were a prefab type of accommodation. Whilst we had great tenants and a great community, the standard of homes fell very much short of what we'd expect or want within Hanover. So we made the decision of considering whether to do a bit of remodelling at that site or indeed go down the new build route. And obviously, as you know, we're taking the decision in conjunction with tenants to take on the passive house.
I think it's maybe just worth saying that the two key driving factors around refurbishment or a new build where the space standards were never going to match the modern space standard that we want in social housing. They were 39 metre square properties, and that's way short of the 50 metre square that we expect. And the other big issue was there was no grant funding going to be available for a refurb. So that was a significant financial impact in terms of the decision.
So explain the process of approaching the tenants about potentially getting a new home, the initial consultation, and how you explained the information to them about passive house and the reasons that you've just given there.
So we first met tenants in and around summer of 2016. So we had several meetings with tenants to discuss optioned appraisals and indeed, given information about what would a retrofit look like if we'd made that decision and indeed the key benefits of passive house. I think I should say from the offset, tenants, as you would expect, were initially apprehensive about the prospect of losing their homes. But after discussions and meetings, it was recognised by all of the tenants and their families that retrofitting, even down aside from the cost, wasn't really a viable option. A lot of that was because of, aside from cost, the way the site was laid out. So, tenants, once they had their head around the prospect of having a new home, and not just a standard home, but, a passive house home, that was really welcomed. Of course, you can appreciate, Kieran, that came with lots of challenges. Trying to demolish and decanting tenants from such a lovely village as Drummond is not an easy task. And certainly tenants were particularly concerned because in and around that area, there's not an awful lot of social housing available that we could use for decant purposes. we were very cautious in our approach as well. Once we had made a decision with tenants about going down a new model and the decanting option, we made sure that we had a lot of lead-in time so that we could consult properly and find our tenants appropriate temporary accommodation that suited their, not only their housing need, but their personal circumstances.
One of the reasons you were able to persuade them, I suspect, was that it was non-traditional build, the original houses, wasn't it? They were Dorian houses. What are Dorian houses?
Jimmy, they are houses that were built post-war, post-1945, with timber construction with steel beams in them. And of course, they are not at all energy efficient properties. So we had electric heating systems in those properties of a very old style. And even if we did a refurb and put in a fancy new heating system, the heat was going to go straight out the fabric of the building because of that non-traditional build type. So that was obviously a strong factor in helping persuade our tenants that a new build option was the right one for them.
Now, of course, not all the tenants who live in these homes now were original tenants and part of the decanting process. I had the pleasure of meeting Mrs. Nicholson, a current tenant in these new properties. Mrs. Nicholson, Linda and her husband were renting in a private tenancy in Drummond after moving back to the mainland from Islay. Their landlord needed to take their house back for family reasons, and this meant homelessness at a time of life when people were expected to be settled. Here's what Linda told us about that experience.
70 plus, we were not expecting to be homeless of any description. It just was not on the plan. But we'd lived on Ireland, we came back, and we couldn't afford to buy the houses in Clare, and the prices were astronomical. So we privately rented, and we thought it was long term. But these things change. Mm-hmm. Obviously, the people who had the home wanted it for something else, which is absolutely correct and every right to do so, but it left ourselves and our neighbour homeless. So if I can say one thing, the council were brilliant. It was a very stressful time. And then at that, the same time my husband was ill, he took ill and was in hospital and back out. So not a year I want to repeat. And the difference between, you know, this year to last year, God, it's night and day.
So, of course, that just adds another thread to this really interesting story, doesn't Angela?
Yeah, isn't it brilliant that we were in a position to support the local authority in terms of housing a number of people who were facing homelessness through the Section 5 route? So that was great, because not all of the tenants, because of their age profile, moved back to their homes after they had been decanted. I mean, the eight of the tenants who were in that original group were over 80 years old. So, you know, they were getting on. And so not all of them, unfortunately, came back. But that did mean we could put that arrangement in place with the local authority.
And Linda was somebody we've mentioned who was familiar with the area, and it's exactly the type of people and family that you would want to be there.
Yeah, it's a nice mixed community in terms of ages. We have some amenity properties in the small development as well as general needs, which is a bit untypical for Hanover. We generally are building for older people, but on that site we were able to have a mix of house types for families and for older people.
Now, Kieran asked what it was like living in a passive house after having a life in more traditional housing, and this is what we were told.
Completely different. I've never experienced. I've always lived in older houses that we've done up and modernised and things, but I've never experienced a passive house
yeah.
before. And it takes a bit of getting used to. And I don't profess to know how it works. It's very comfortable. I don't like it hot. Mm-hmm. I like it to be on the cooler end. But we had the whole winter. I mean, we come in almost a year come the end of October. Well, there will be a year at the end of October. So we had a winter and we were very comfortable. Our running rates for the electricity is fantastic. It's half of what we were paying in our previous home. In fact, I was just looking at the EDF app and I think my highest bill was January, was £150. And it's gone down every month. Last month was 50. But what I find strange is we've got one radiator and one bathroom towel rail, and none of the two are ever on. So I don't know actually what I'm paying for. I think the house is hot enough without any heating system. Yeah, it's fantastic. And what, I can't remember who it was, but when we were shown around the house, we were told under strict instructions, don't touch any dials or anything in that boiler.
Right.
That's a no-go area.
Yeah.
And we never have. We've been terrified to touch anything. He also said the radiators will never be warm. Like if you've got a gas system and you touch your radiators and they're up at 20, you can feel it's on. Here, if the radiator did come on, it's like lukewarm. So I think psychologically, you've got to get your head around that it's a completely different system. So don't expect your radiators to be boiling. And also having the air changing all the time is obviously another. If you feel the house getting stuffy, you can just press the button and the air system goes round and freshens all the air. And so that's good.
Now, there's quite a few questions come out of all of that, and clearly Mrs. Nicholson's absolutely delighted with her new house and her heating bills are half what they were before. But passive houses, people say that the whole heating bill for a whole year could be £150, and that was just 1 month in January. So I wonder, is it a case that it takes a while to work out exactly how to live in a passive house? Is that the problem? And she's saying that she doesn't really want her heating on, but she's been told she kind of has to have it. Don't touch the dials. So, you know, I know this is really difficult getting across to tenants, the complexities of a new system that they haven't worked with before. So tell us about that. Tell us how you approach that problem.
I think that really is something that we were currently working on, Jimmy, just now. Obviously, tenants are embracing this new house style, and it does take a bit of getting used to. So they're moving away from having that traditional fire or traditional radiator to actually just having a house maintain its heat at all times, so that you're sitting at a fairly stable temperature. The new homes won't overheat, there's no drafts, and they can keep that comfortable temperature all round. And it was great to hear the tenant using the ventilation system. That was really encouraging. But it does take that bit of getting used to. People still are of a mindset that if they don't have a fire or can turn heaters up, that's perhaps not working. But they have admitted themselves, you know, we're still at an early part of it, and we've surveyed the tenants just after they moved in, and we're going to continue to do that. There's also an educational piece there, I think, for tenants, for Hanover, and indeed for contractors, because as we know, there's not a lot of people out there that have done passive house in Scotland, so it's still at the very, very early stages. So it's something that we're very, very alert to. What we're also hoping to do is to simplify instructions, do a bit of an educational piece, and I think that will be a great benefit to tenants, applicants, and of course, our own staff themselves.
Yeah, absolutely. And Janice and I were out a few weeks ago just visiting some of the tenants and hearing their own lived experiences of a passive house. And it went from one end of the, you know, like the tenant you've just heard from, very positive, to others who are much less positive about their experience and how complicated they find the system, how complicated they find the instructions they were given at the beginning. So we're going to back to revisit that, as Janice said, and think about how we keep it as simple as possible, but keep going back and doing the education piece till people feel really comfortable knowing what the system is like and how they can use it to their, you know, best living conditions.
back to the tenants who were initially there and part of the process of the designing of the new homes and so on. I know that they had a request for an access path between the properties to remain. Did they have any other requests, and why was this request made in particular?
I'm not quite sure on the access path between them both. I think there was obviously a design issue that they couldn't accommodate that, like, between Montrose Way and Connick Way. All of the other requests that tenants wanted were met. I mean, some were very clear about the fact that we'd have liked an open plan kitchen living area, and Kieran, I know you've been part of that. I think something that tenants felt quite passionate about was not only improved space standards, but also having cupboards and built-in wardrobes and some of the basic things that actually make life easier for older people. So we did take all of that on board, so that we got all of those components right for the new tenants when they move back.
And in this moving process, how did Hanover take account of all the individual circumstances and needs?
Well, that was tricky, because as you can imagine, people are all different. So what we did do is we'd group meetings with tenants initially to set the scene, and trying to help people understand how we would take them through the journey. We quite quickly made up question and answers that could not only support tenants but families, because I think that's really important that we kept everyone engaged. We did try to make sure that our communication with everyone was kept simple and straightforward and at a pace that everyone understood, just to try and take away that whole fear. And that worked really well. We kept in contact with the tenants on a fortnightly basis by the phone. We had monthly individual meetings, and that allowed us to really understand everybody's individual needs, from their housing to their care package to their own personal choice to what area they would like to be temporarily moved to. We even got right down to the idea of liaising with local pharmacies, etc., so that when people moved, we'd actually try to set and guess everything that they needed to make the whole process as seamless as possible. That worked very well, and the feedback from the tenants that have come back have been very positive about the approach that we've taken.
Has digital communication played any part in any of this?
Oh, absolutely. We had regular emails, obviously, to tenants and families. Of course, our tenants, being of the generation they are, they enjoyed that phone call, Jimmy. So the phone call and the chat was really, really crucial. But yes, of course, we had electronic newsletters. We had, it's amazing when people's mums or dads have to move homes, you have a whole family of questions. So it's not only the individual tenants' questions, but you've got a whole family of questions and fears that it's important that you're able to answer.
Well, Mrs. Nicholson's roots have been in the Killearn area for 9 generations, and she thinks that social housing is essential to keeping communities together. Here's what Linda said.
I think it's absolutely crucial, and even when we were first married, we struggled to be able to stay in the village because you were getting priced out. So the locals were having to move further away, and then commuters were coming in. So you were getting a complete change of balance, and I don't think that's right. I think social housing, or any kind of housing, affordable housing, has to be crucial to let people stay where their roots are. And this is a great street because it's got a really good mix. You've got social housing on one side and you've got private properties on the other side. You've got older people, young couples in their early 20s. I'm assuming that's what age the flower. You've got us old codgers next door. So you've got new baby just arrived across the road, a young couple. So it's a really nice mix and everybody's pleasant. And so we're very, very happy. I feel as though I've won the lottery.
So what you've done is you've managed to contribute to creating a really balanced community in Drummond, which is great. How hard is it to do that, though, with all the kind of restrictions that there are in letting and the obvious need to rehouse the tenants that were in the scheme before?
Well, what we did, we had four households that came back, and everyone else, Jimmy, came from nominations from Stirling Council. So they were allowed 100% nominations for that first round of allocations. And as Angela said, we brought, you know, that we had eight Section 5 referrals from that, and that they had great outcomes. But it's amazing how people within our German development have settled in very, very quickly, regardless of where your background or which area they've come from, or whether they were a nomination from the council or whether they were a previous tenant. They have very much bedded down to just being actually neighbourly, and as a genuine community feel, regardless of age, because we've got a real mixed group. You know, we've got the young family and we've got the older person, but Mrs. Nicholson sums that up very nicely. And that actually they've settled in very well together.
Now, I'm an East Coaster, but I don't know much about Drummen, but I understand people tell me it's one of the loveliest parts of Scotland.
Well, it's in the National Park, the Trossachs National Park, and you can imagine, as Linda indicates, the profile of the housing system within that village has changed dramatically over the years. So to be able to preserve some social housing, much needed social housing, in a small rural village that meets that absolute need. You can hear Linda's story, and there's many like it in that development. We are absolutely delighted that we were able to maintain our presence there. And, you know, there are many villages where, through the Right to Buy and other causes, have lost any social housing. You know, there's none at all. And that's a real tragedy for local people.
Part of the planning application process allows the public, the general public, the wider public, to comment on whether they like or don't like a certain plan. But in this time of great NIMBYism, it was quite refreshing to see that the local community council actually were in favour of this development and commended the architects and yourselves on the consultation process. Was that also pleasing on your behalf?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely, Kieran. We took time to make sure that we'd set the architect up in a local area, a local place, in the church hall. We were present, the architect was present, and we really encouraged people from the local community to come along and have a look and have that chat. The architect was great. They were able to answer any questions and, of course, squash some myths that were out there. And it did generate a lot of local interest. But I also gave some reassurance that the new build itself would be in keeping with the local area, because it was obviously an important part of the local community. So yes, I think we actually worked really well with the architect on that, and it did help to settle down any neighbours and any questions that would normally arise when you start to build any new build in a local community.
Can we talk a little bit about passive houses now in general? Your experience of building this development means that you're ahead of many other housing associations. What have you learned? Would you do it again? And we might all have to do it, because the Scottish Government is talking about bringing in that as a minimum standard. But in terms of your experience so far, what have you learned? What can you share with others?
Well, I think it wasn't that much more expensive in terms of the cost of the build. From a tenant perspective, there's just lots of learning still to be done, for sure, about making sure people get the real benefits of living in that type of home. It was actually an easy one for us because it's a small development, and the houses are, you know, are individual houses, couple of terraced houses, and some bungalows. So actually, it's quite easy. Our normal new build properties are a sheltered housing development. And what we don't know yet, and we're starting to think a lot more about, is the passive house standard replicable in a standard 35 bedroom or 35 property unit of a sheltered housing block? How will it work in that situation? Now, we know certainly some of the larger local authorities down south have been doing that for years. So we're going to go and talk to them about what they've learned about adopting passive house in a much bigger development that's flatted and three stories high, for example. And think about that, because, you know, we've got a couple of years before our next new development comes on site. So we're going to use that time wisely.
Again, thinking of the general picture of development in Scotland at the moment and the rising prices and the building inflation that we've had, are you confident about the future and in terms of developing new housing and making that change to net zero? What do you see are the challenges there?
Yeah, Hanover is very confident about the future in terms of new build. We have just finished a five-year development programme and are just putting together our next 5 years. And what we've paused to ask ourselves is, what type of housing or model of housing should an older person's specialist organisation focus on going forward? And our board and our senior team are very clear that our focus going forward, given the explosion in the older people population, will be the housing with care or extra care housing model. And that's the way to go for us, which, you know, raises a whole load of extra challenges because you're also there for a care provider and have to meet all the requirements around that, both in terms of legislation, regulation, and, you know, financial management. But we're really committed to doing that, given the huge gap there is in provision in Scotland. That's almost the easy part, because financially we're able to do that. The bigger challenge for us is that a lot of our stock now is over 40 years old. The challenge we have is, how do we bring that stock up to modern day standards? Not just in terms of net zero, because obviously that is really important, but even the layout and the design of these older sheltered housing developments is causing us some challenges in terms of their appeal. So we've got a real challenge around, how do we remodel, how do we keep them as attractive as possible, and where that can't be done, what is the strategy for making sure we get some use out of them? For example, for respite care, that we could possibly put in place with support of the local health and social care partnerships.
And there is a bit of a trend to demolish houses and kind of accept that it's not possible to bring them up to date. But I wonder if people have put enough thought and imagination into that. And I mean, you certainly tried hard with this particular development in Drummond to retrofit and to keep what was there already. There's embodied carbon and all of that. Do you think the net zero ambition is actually realistic within some of the existing houses that you have? Or are you going to end up putting in these high efficiency storage heaters as a way of meeting the net zero standard, even though tenants won't be happy with that?
Yeah, it's a great question. And we have three developments right now where we're trying different approaches to meet both of those challenges of, how do we retrofit and refurb, so to speak, where we have low demand, but in developments that are stunningly beautiful and fabulous locations, and you really should not knock them down, and get much more inventive with your architects and your teams to come up with solutions. And we've done that particularly in one just outside Perth and one in Edinburgh. And the approach we've taken is different in each one, to do a bit of internal remodeling. So two one-bedroom properties into two-bedroom properties, for example, along with all of the fabric first measures, to see if that is what will make the difference. And it is a bit of a gamble, Jimmy, in terms of, will it ever meet the high level of, you know, energy efficiency that we would want it to. That will remain to be seen in some of these developments, and only time will tell. But it's what our tenants absolutely firmly want to happen for the developments and the homes that they've lived in for a long, long time.
And back to the challenges you've said about an ageing population. You're obviously looking to develop housing with care and other age-specific developments. Should there be a special provision in the law or the planning process for these types of developments, do you think? I mean, if the Scottish government was listening, what would you be asking for?
I would be asking for a specific target, like we have put in place, even if it's not in law, for accessible housing. And there's definitely something missing in in our aspirations as a nation that isn't written down in Housing for 2040 about, you know, building enough housing for older people. Now, many people would argue that if you build accessible housing, that is going to meet demand for older people because it's accessible whatever age you are. But actually building communities for older people is one of the biggest benefits from having dedicated older people housing, because of the loneliness and the isolation, because of the changing needs where you need a care service potentially, and having the benefit of a number of homes in the one location to deliver all of that in a flexible way, to me is the real benefit of having dedicated older people's housing provision. You know, we're already have a massive gap. The gap analysis that I've seen in recent months says that we're something like 40,000 units short already in Scotland of dedicated older people's housing. And of course, that is only going to get bigger, isn't it, over the next couple of decades.
We explored a lot of these issues in one of our earlier podcasts. We attended a meeting at the Scottish Parliament, and we also interviewed Paul McLennan, MSP, who has now become the Housing Minister, and he was quite keen on housing with care. So maybe there's a way forward there.
Thanks to Angela Curry and Janice McDonald from Hanover for sharing the great story. Thanks to my co-host, Jimmy Black. I'm Kieran Finlay, and we'll be back in a couple of weeks.